If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hi, my name is Agile, and I support Gen X Grown Up through Patreon, and I believe you should too. Just go to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be French fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up Podcast listener, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown-Up Podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, of course, is Mo.
Hey, everybody.
And would be a show without George. How's it going, George?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
You know, before the days of media streaming and binging, we were often glued to our sets to watch contestants compete for cash and prizes. From quizzes to puzzles to trivia and more, game shows both entertain and allow us to play along at home. So, hands on your buzzers. It's time to look back at some of our favorite Gen X era TV game shows. Now, before we get into that, we have some great fourth listener feedback from one of our longtime supporters and listeners, Thanos, who dropped us a line over on Discord.
Thanos
dropped us a line in reference to the Eddie Murphy Delirious backtrack from a few months ago, I guess. Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Here is what Thanos had to say. The Delirious podcast was excellent.
Well, there you go. End of statement.
Done. End of segment. Okay.
Let's skip the rest.
No, the rest is good too. Let's do the rest.
Okay.
When I first saw the subject, I was worried. Delirious and Raw helped birth my fascination with stand-up comedy, and I have both almost completely memorized, along with An Evening with Robin Williams and An Evening at the Met.
Oh.
The beginning of Delirious is rough to listen to 40 years later and is littered with landmines. And George, you pointed out a lot of that during the podcast, how it's a little uncomfortable to watch, but it was part of the fabric of the culture then. Thanos goes on to say, I don't know what I was worried about. You three handled it with style, grace, and the respect and sensitivity it deserves. A perfect example of how these types of subjects can be handled. Well done. Thank you, Thanos. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
And he finally says, I'm a little shocked no one mentioned the fart game, though.
This is true. We did skip that whole part. And to be honest, looking back on it, because we really didn't talk about too much about, like, other than to say, like, wow, that was a little uncomfortable. But, you know, I'm actually surprised how well we handled the subject, to be honest. I was like, we were adults.
Hey, what'd you call me? Don't say that. Thanos, we appreciate you writing in. We love it anytime the fourth listener takes time to write in. If you would like your email featured here on the show, it's drop dead easy. You can hit us up over on Discord, as Thanos did, at genxgrownup.com/discord, or drop us an email at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We'll read every single one, and most of them, like Thanos's, will eventually make the show. All right, time to jump into this backtrack all about Gen X era game shows right after this. Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals, and they're meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack. And it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have over 35 options. Mm. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are right. Things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
Dolls for 300. This little sister of Barbie was introduced in 1964.
Who is Skipper?
Who is Skipper?
I knew that.
You did ship. Not.
This ship, named for a fish, washed aground on an uncharted desert isle.
Gene, what is the minnow?
That was hard.
Please tease TV for 500.
This pigtail castaway wore bare midriff tops and shorts.
Who is Marianne?
Yeah, and who packed evening gowns for a 3-hour tour?
Get into Jeopardy tonight at 7 on 7.
As we were prepping to talk about Gen X era game shows, we realized, first we had a list, and there were hundreds of game shows starting back from the origin, because we lived through the game shows that started in the 60s and 70s. We watched constantly when we were kids, of course. And we had this huge list, and we've narrowed that down to some of our favorites that we'll talk about a bit later in the show. But as we always like to do, we want to kind of start with the origin of the topic we're talking about. And Mo was tasked with the Herculean effort of digging into the history of game shows. So what'd you find, Mo?
Actually, it's kind of interesting. As long as they've been broadcast, there have been contests, right? So the first one started with radio back in 1930s, and they had those, you know, the simple like quiz shows. They put a question out there, somebody would call in an answer, and then you'd win like $25. There's one called Professor Quiz, actually. That was the really creative names they made up back then.
Nothing to compete
with. $25. Yeah, it doesn't seem like a lot, but, you know, 1930s, $25 is probably closer to $500 today. So, you know, hey, not nothing. They also had a game on radio called Truth and Consequences that began in the late 1930s. But then when TV popped in, they translated it and did like a special broadcast for TV of that radio show, which turns out was like exactly the radio show format. They just had cameras on them. Like, they didn't change anything else.
Okay.
But really, things didn't really get big until like after World War II. That's when they started asking, like, you know, started offering like really kind of at the time big money and had a lot more contests, and it was completely unregulated. And the FCC actually tried to remove them totally from broadcast because they thought it was gambling. And so they were
really?
We can't have that in this country.
So what did they think was the gambling? Was it because people were like, were they bidding, or they just had a chance to win money?
That was it.
Okay.
But apparently that didn't stop the TV stations from doing game shows. So they went ahead and just kept going with it anyway. And 1946 was a big time because there was a show called Winner Take All, which I'm sure nobody ever heard of, but it actually added a lot of things that we see today, like the returning champion, because before people would go on once and then be gone. Now they have people, you know, if you win, you came back on the show again, and which kept people coming back to listen to see how far that person would get, you know, that, you know. And then also the whole thing about the buzzer buzzing in and all that stuff started then.
So the returning champion thing made it almost like a story, like you're going back to go, oh, let's see if this guy continues to go on. So you're almost weaving a little bit of narrative into your game show.
Yeah. Yeah. And people like, you know, rooting for somebody, you know, and,
or against, like, get that guy off
of
there.
Against, right. Exactly. I hate that guy. I hope he loses next time. And then you'll watch it, or you love the guy and you'll watch it. Right.
Yep.
So the first one, though, that became a regularly scheduled game show, because up until then, they were all like one-offs, was a game called Cash and Carry. I don't know if you guys, if you get a chance, look up some videos on this game, because it was nothing but product placement. That is pretty much the entire game. You know, people had to pick, like, cans had dollar amounts on them, but each can was a product that one of the sponsors.
Like a green beans or a peas,
a green
or something.
Kinda, green giant this or whatever.
Yeah.
And then once they picked the can, then there was a question that they would ask. And if they won, they got the money. So again, it was not very sophisticated, but it did pretty well, actually. So then 1954, Supreme Court said, you know what? Game shows are not gambling. So then that just opened the floodgates. Everybody went crazy after that.
Wait, so even when the FCC was saying they were, it's like they just kept doing them anyway because it wasn't technically illegal.
Right. It was still in court. They were still fighting.
It was still being debated. I see.
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, again, and it was something that people watched. And so TV, you know, especially back then, you know, they were like anything to get eyes on their TVs they were going with. So,
yeah, it's a hard legal argument for them to make because truthfully, I mean, gambling requires the participant to place a wager and none of the contestants are paying for anything. They're just there with the possibility of winning prizes. It's very much just like a church bingo type of thing.
George, you missed your call. You should have been a lawyer because that was almost exactly the argument they used that they
really
the Supreme Court.
And even if you wagered, it wasn't your money. It's like, all right, we started with a bank of $100.
Exactly.
How much do you wager? That kind of thing. It wasn't real money until you left, and it was always you're going to win something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But then in 1955, that was like the greatest time and darkest time in a way because they had things like the $64,000 question, 21, break the bank. And I'm sure you've heard of a lot of these shows. And the reason why you might have heard a lot of these shows is because they were all rampantly cheating. It was staged.
Wait. Now, I've heard rumor of, people think it's rigged, but like these were genuinely accurate.
They were genuinely rigged. Oh, they were absolutely.
Oh, really?
Rigged. Like 21, the contestants were like, they had one where in 21 that they had a guy who was very handsome and personable and stuff. They would feed him answers so he would stay on the show.
Oh, so the eye candy was back next week.
And people liked him. Like he was very personal. So whereas, there's somebody who was smarter and not as good looking and they they purposely totally rigged the games so that to keep viewers. So it was like
keeping the nerds down. Damn it.
Exactly. But then, of course, after that happened, it was exposed and laws came into place and all this stuff. So they really became a lot more legislated so that they couldn't do any more cheating and it had to be fair. And there were people watching over them and such.
There was suspicion that it was cheating. And I can imagine that kind of tainted it, right? It's kind of like when you're watching a baseball game and you find out like, this guy's actually throwing the game or he's intentionally striking out or whatever, you know. Fans don't want to see that. They want to see genuine competition, you know?
Right.
So I can imagine after the laws in place, that's probably why we saw this bounce back after, because now people are like, okay, now I can trust it. Now I can enjoy it. And not at least there's an expectation of fairness now. So that's good.
Yeah. And also the people who won some of these games became kind of like mini celebrities after they won this $64,000 question or whatever. So it was like, who wants to be a millionaire? Except back then people cared after they won, you know, and they would be on talk shows and it would be on this, you know, and that kind of stuff. So then to find out that this person like basically was fed the answers and wasn't that smart, you know, it was very disillusioning. But like you said, the 1960s, the game show totally bounced back and they changed the focus. Instead of making it on like, win these prizes, they said, let's make them fun and entertaining. So they became more entertainment shows than game shows in a way.
Oh, now that you say that, I can sense the strictly trivia and chance thing to the more like the Hollywood Squares. You got a bunch of celebrities and they'll say funny things. Oh, and by the way, which one do you agree with? Kind of thing.
Right.
All right.
Even on Password, there's always a celebrity and a person.
Right. That's right.
And it was usually a comedian of some sort.
Mm.
And then things like the dating game started then, which is not kind of a, I don't know if that considered that a game show. I guess it is. You win a date.
Well, you take your chances for sure.
You know, it's like, I guess you won a date. Yeah.
Now that's gambling.
The FCC should be against that. But also in the 1960s, that's when some of the biggest names came about, like Merv Griffin, Monty Hall, Chuck Barris, Bob Stewart. I mean, that was when they came in and really started some of the games that even to this day, some of these games are still being played around TV.
Those are like legends. Those guys became celebrities like beyond their game show stuff. Someone went on to do other cool stuff. Oh, yeah. Wow.
So let's jump to 1970s. They also, now is when they got another big boost. So now they kind of switch it up to, they realize that if you offer really big money, then people watch because they want to see that person who wants to win that million or win at the
more
time, $10,000, you know. And also games like the Price is Right and all that stuff. And you got like Bob Barker, Chuck Berry, you know, the really big legends again started coming in. Dick Clark, you know, in the $10,000 pyramid.
Oh, huge.
You
know?
So they actually even got some like minor celebrities to host these things now instead of just random announcer that they knew about, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh,
they
good
got personalities.
Pitchmen.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I saw that you put in here in the research, which stunned me, and I have to go back and read it again. said at one point in the 1970s, it was possible to watch game shows continuously from 9 in the morning to 8 at night in some cities, thanks to syndication. 9 in the morning to 11 hours of solid game shows. And they're typically 30 minutes. So we're talking 22 game shows that you could watch all day long because you had the local channel had their stuff. And then you had the network had their stuff. And then syndication, you could bring in shows, either repeats or new runs stuff. That is crazy. And it's during that time you had noted that the big two, two of the big two or three, I guess, Wheel of Fortune, one of the huge ones, and Family Feud, that was the window of time when those really took off and became, and still are, very, very popular.
Yeah.
Stunning.
That factoid just reminds me of the movie PCU, where the guy is sitting on the couch and he's trying to watch the two different TV shows. He's like, there's this thing, and this is my dissertation for my college PhD about TV watching. You see the guy sitting there watching game shows the whole time, but the one that gets me is, you know, when cable came around in the 1980s, that's when you started getting a lot of the smaller niche game shows like on MTV. You know, you got Remote Control.
Oh,
Nickelodeon had the kids Double Dare stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, all that stuff was designed to appeal to a younger audience because the younger audience was more in tune with the cable revolution, where the older audience was still watching the over-the-air CBS, NBC, ABC stuff. And it was kind of like the younger kids were, cable was their thing. And that was us. That was me when I was growing up in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s when all that stuff was happening. So I remember transitioning from my parents' game shows to my game shows.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal for me in the 80s.
Because those game shows, like you said, Mo, those came out of after World War II. That's when it started to really ramp up in the late 40s and early 50s. And that was, that's boomer shows. Those were the shows of our parents, our boomer parents. So cable, new shows for us. And that's plus the gamification or the celebrityification of them combined. No wonder it became so popular.
And also, I mean, remember back when we were little kids, you know, you had the four network channels and they had to appeal to everybody, right? They tried to appeal to everybody. Whereas now you have like Nickelodeon. They cared about kids. That's the only the only audience they cared about. So everything could be geared toward them. So, and then we jump now to the 1990s. This was actually kind of like a downtime for game shows because of cable, honestly.
Yeah.
Network TV just couldn't really compete. They couldn't get the audiences anymore. But then in 1994, because of cable, the game show network started. Do you guys remember?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, cable started to ruin game shows, and then it brought them back in a big way.
Exactly. I mean, who thought that a game show, you would watch a game show from 20 years ago, and it'd still be interesting? But people did. I mean, it's crazy.
It almost doesn't make sense. But then you watch one and you forget that it's pre-recorded because you can't affect the show anyway. As long as you don't know the outcome, it's the same surprise, the same trivia you learn, the same, you know, jokes that happen that you would have enjoyed back then. And plus you get that slice of life like, oh, this is from the 60s. Listen to the way people acted and the way people dressed and the way people talked back then.
Big hair.
So you get that extra layer of nostalgia and entertainment.
Which one of the networks came out first? Was it Game Show Network that came out first or Cartoon Network? Because I think Cartoon Network
came out first, I think.
I think so.
Cartoon Network was the early days of cable.
And that's probably why they felt like Game Show Network would be successful, because Cartoon Network had been successful then, would be my guess. I mean, if you're sitting there looking at that model like John's talking about, like, who thinks Game Show Network makes sense? But if you have it in the context of, well, the Cartoon Network is kicking ass, we might as well try Game Show Network and see. Because they, as Mo's research found out, they certainly had plenty of game shows use because you could watch them for 11 or whatever hours a day.
I bet you could get them on the cheap, too, for programming.
Oh, sure.
You probably could get all that stuff. So it's probably inexpensive to put that cable channel on.
Well, and game shows are inexpensive to make in general. I mean, the production of the prizes, once you have the stage and set up and you have the rules set up, it just costs you the production cost of whoever's on the staff and the prizes. There's no writers. There's no script. There's no really editors because it was usually live and it's just punched live. So you didn't have to edit it. So they're really inexpensive to make. So you do them like 5 days a week. You know, they'd be regular. So you have hundreds and hundreds of episodes. You have a show that ran for 3 years. You're like, oh, what is that? Like 60 episodes? No, not for a game show. That's hundreds of episodes. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's got to be writers, though.
Well, certainly. Like to write quizzes and stuff like that. But if it's something just like think like a Wheel of fortune. You have to make up, you know, five puzzles for the show. It's not like you have a whole lot of in-depth research and writing. Jeopardy is one that probably is more research because you got to dig into facts. But yeah, they're probably just digging through Trivial Pursuit cards and just let's go in this box.
So now you get to the 2000s, and this is when game shows actually made a really big comeback because they realized how to draw audiences was really big prizes and really high stress. So things like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I remember when that first came out. Huge. Holy cow, everybody was watching that. The Weakest Link, another height. And also, that's when a kind of a new subset of game shows of mixing reality TV with prizes. So Survivor, Big Brother. Because in a sense, those are game shows.
I mean, they are. But like, you're living the show, not playing the show. Yeah, it's much more involved in both cases. Ironically, I love Survivor, can't stand Big Brother. They're almost the same show. One's on an island and one's in a house.
One's outside, one's inside. That's
pretty
it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but they got to do like out in the where they do Survivor now. It's always in that one country, right?
Where are they
bouncing.
Yeah, like Samoa somewhere. Fiji. Yeah. They're in Fiji now.
Fiji. Yeah, see? Of course. They're in Fiji, whereas the other one's in California somewhere, right? So who cares?
Well, or London or wherever. I think it was interesting, though, that those shows you mentioned, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and Weakest Link, I don't remember because, you know, I grew up much later, game shows being on in prime time until then.
That's a good point.
The old game shows, like the 50s and 60s, used to be in prime time. So when those started coming out in prime time in the 2000s, it was like TV event. Like everybody was like, when's the next Who Wants to Be a Millionaire coming? Because they didn't come out every night at first. They were like once a week, or they were like a new one's coming out in 2 weeks or something. And people were glued.
They would run little bursts. They'd run for a week or two and then stop and then run again. Yeah.
It kind of brought back appointment TV a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because people didn't want to wait for their DVR to kick in. They wanted to watch it right away.
But also, imagine trying to not find out who won on who won, you know. If you're a devotee of the show, you know, if you
dodging the spoiler.
Night, you know, as soon as you went to work the next day, you found out who won.
Because everybody's talking about, I can't believe that guy won. I didn't see it yet. Too late.
Or didn't win, or he lost, you know, or he gambled it all and lost everything. So, and then, so look at today. Recently, there have been a really big revival of the classic game shows where they basically kind of got newer hosts, like, you know, Family Feud, Price is Right, and they rebooted some games like Match Game and $100,000 Pyramid now. And again, just getting some new hosts, getting some new comedians and just kind of like modernizing it, but still keeping that little nostalgia feel of the old game.
Yeah, I think mine that's going to be down in the list when I talk about the new host of that show when they revived it in the 20 teens is going to blow everybody's mind. There's no way that person should have been hosting a game show.
Cool.
Okay. Well, what a segue then. Okay.
Yeah, so that's perfect.
So we've got a background on these shows. When we get back for the break, we're going to dig into some of our favorites and talk about why we liked them so much. Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show, too. It helps more than you know.
Weekdays on CBS, it's time to press your luck. TV's hottest new game show where you can win a bundle or lose your shirt. Watch host Peter Tamarkin give contestants the chance to win a fortune.
I'm going to press my luck.
Are you ready to press your luck? Weekdays.
In the heat of the day, the all-new Card Sharks deals you a handful of excitement. I'm Bob Eubanks inviting you to join the fun as fortunes are won with the turn of a single card. Weekday.
It's appropriate for us to probably start off with the most well-known game show. So that way, we're talking about the ones that the largest part of our listening audience will remember. And Mo, I think the one that you selected is probably, I mean, it's probably the granddaddy of them all. It may be one of the longest running in a row kind of shows. It's been out there for a while, but why don't you tell us what your favorite well-known show is?
Oh, my favorite is definitely The Price is Right.
Come on down,
Bob Barker.
Don't forget to have your contestants spayed or neutered.
Yep. I mean, because it started
not the contestants, George.
Well, who cares?
I mean, it started back in 72, like the modern version of it. Mm-hmm. And it has been on continually pretty much since then. And the reason why I just remember the show is really not because I particularly liked it, although there were parts of it I did, because there was all the little mini games they had in it. Mm-hmm. You know, like the guy with the yodeling going up the mountain. And
Climber. Yes.
I remember most is just rather. Is when I met my, was with my grandmother, like maybe during the summer, or if like my school had a holiday and nobody else did. So I would go to my grandmother's house and hang out there day. And she loved this show. And I think she loved this show because she loved yelling at the people on TV who did not know how much 5 pounds of sugar cost. She's like, how the hell, you know, this person never been in a store, doesn't know a dozen eggs cost.
I'm going to give me, I saw a documentary about it. There was a guy who, I guess he must have lived in California, and he went to a ton of the TV show tapings, and he built his own little database of all the prices, because apparently they didn't change them from show to show for a while.
Oh,
yeah.
And so he knew everything within like a few cents, and he would be shouting them out. He got up on stage one time, that was the time when they gave him something that had never been on the show before, so he lost.
Of course.
But he was in the audience shouting it. And then another couple apparently was trying to take credit for what he had done. And it went back and forth. Crazy stuff with that. But the fact that to John's point of having very few writers, I guess, that they never changed their prices from year to year on the items that they brought up. That just shows how like they got in a rut and just went with it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And talk about product placement. Price is Right is just, here's a product that's been placed. How much does it cost? That's the question, right?
Yeah. Like, I never heard of Rice-A-Roni until this show.
Rice-A-Roni.
And you know what? It's the San Francisco treat, pal.
Man.
I associate the Price is Right with not feeling great, because that was when I watched the most if I was homesick. For whatever reason, I think I wasn't awake in time during the summer to watch it, because I would watch cartoons on Saturday, but otherwise I would sleep in. So I didn't get up. What was it on? 11, 12, 1? I don't know. But if I was homesick, like when I see the Price is Right, you see the logo with the chasing spotlights around it.
Right.
And I can taste 7-Up, chicken noodle soup, a little NyQuil or DayQuil or whatever. You could have a little cold or something at home from school. And I don't know what, it made it so much fun to watch when you're sick, and it made me feel better. And so I associate that with feeling sick, but it makes me feel better having watched it. I look at it and I taste the soup and the Sprite and whatever I was eating and feel better.
I mean, and George, you're saying how this is so like one of the big granddaddy games. There's over 9,000 episodes of The Price is Right.
Holy moly.
I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, I can't even imagine how much money and stuff they gave away, but it was one of the few hour long ones as well. It was like a full hour show. It wasn't just a half
That's
hour.
That's right.
They would do, be like two halves, and then have the big final, you know, the final
showcase showdown. Right.
And never take the first one. I remember that too.
Is that the rule?
The second one was always better.
Yeah, the second showcase is always better.
It was always better.
I don't think they gave away a lot of money though, because I think those items were provided by the manufacturers in order for the product placement that John was talking about. Like, you know, a car company would probably give the car to the show to give away.
Oh, I'm sure.
As part of the compensation for the advertising.
Because they got free advertising.
It's advertising. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I don't think I know there were some of the shows where they would, or some of the games where they'd give out, you know, he'd take a crisp $100 bill out of his pocket on the wheel and shit.
Yep. Yeah.
But I don't think the show itself cost them nearly as much money as they generated.
Yeah. Production costs.
Oh, it's definitely not.
I bet they generated far more in ad revenue.
For sure. For sure. Mm. So, and I'll leave it this one. The Price Right has only had two hosts, basically. Bob Barker until 2007.
Yeah.
And then Drew Carey has been doing it since. That's it.
Wow. Yeah. I was just thinking about the transition from Bob Barker to Drew Carey and how awkward it was at first, and how now, if you watch it recently, it just feels like he owns the show. Like he's now in it. And he's not just copying Bob Barker, but he certainly does things in a way that is reminiscent of what Bob Barker would do. You know, the kind of, he's not smarmy, but just on the edge of smarmy and super friendly. And everybody just wants to go up there and stand with Drew like they want to go up there and stand with Bob. It's really neat how Drew kind of grew into that after being kind of an oddball, quirky comic and an actor. Is really neat.
Yeah. So that was mine. He said a lot of history, a lot of great stories behind it. But John, what do you got for us?
So, interestingly, I would never, ever be on this show, but I really loved the Newlywed Game. I think I loved it and still love watching it because of how incredibly uncomfortable it makes people, the contestants, which is different from every other show where they're there just to, you know, answer the questions and do stuff. So if you haven't seen it, the Newlywed Game, originally hosted by Bob Eubanks, amazing guy. They take newly married couples and pit them against each other in a series of revealing questions to determine how well they do or don't know each other. And invariably, it was like, and they have they make them write it on this big poster board, and they answer all the questions and write them down. And then they sit there and talk. All right, we asked your husband, how many times a night does he come home and dinner's not ready? And then,
yeah, it's always some sexist.
All right, let's see what he said. And he holds up the board, and it's something terrible. You know, it's like he said every night. And then she hits him or something crazy.
Right.
It began in 1966 on ABC.
Wow, that long. Wow.
Yeah. And like so many shows, many of the shows I looked up, it ran for 8.5 years and then it was canceled. And then they ran a syndicated version from 77 to 80 and then that got canceled. And then 85 to 89 was the new Newlywed Game. And there was another one in 96 to 99. It just kept coming back. But the early on, after the 85 to 89 run, the Newlywed Game was the longest running daytime game show until Family Feud passed it in 1985. But it had been the king of all of those. Probably the most memorable part of the show is because when it started back in the 60s, you couldn't say sex on TV. You couldn't talk about sex. You couldn't say intercourse. Right. You couldn't say that. And so Bob Eubanks came up with this making whoopee euphemism for sex. And he would, you know, the question would be like, so we ask your spouse, how many times per month do you have whoopee not in the bedroom or something? You know, it'd be a question like that. And it'd be some, and so it'd make him come up with revealing answers.
Right.
And later in the late 70s and 80s and 90s, when you could say sex and whatever on they continued to say whoopee because it became a catchphrase of the show. They would not say that just because that became the joke that was a running joke in the show. And so making whoopee became a universal euphemism outside of the Newlywed Game if you were talking about sex.
I still think the Newlywed Game has provided my favorite crazy contestant moment of all time of any of the shows. And that's the one where
the one you mean
the couple.
Go ahead.
Yeah, everybody does. It's the one where the couple, the husband's already written down his answer, and Eubanks says, what's the most uncomfortable place you and your husband have ever made whoopee? And she says, in the ass. And they have the bleeper. And Bobby Eubanks' look on his face.
I'm in geographic
the
location.
The husband has, like, in the back seat of a Volvo right. or something like that on his car. And she's like, and he asked her to clarify. And she's like, in the ass. What do you mean?
It's quite uncomfortable.
Oh, man. I swear. But you watched that show, though, for when people were just not on the same page. I mean, that's what you watched it for, right?
Yeah, of course. Exactly. You watch them be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll say is in 2013, TV Guide ranked their 60 greatest game shows ever. Newlywed Game was number 10.
Okay.
For its longevity and its popularity and its rewatchability. There's something about seeing other people uncomfortable and I'm not involved is so nice. So, yeah, Newlywed Game is the longest running, probably best known show that I can rewatch still today. How about you, George? Do you have one that well known that your pick?
Yeah, I mean, along with Moe's only having two show hosts, mine has 2.5. Okay. I'm going to call it. Okay. Wheel of Fortune, which started in 1975.
Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah. So the original host, and this is, you know, one that's like one of those trivia points, is Chuck Woolery. He was the guy who was there.
Really?
First,
he was the original host.
Legendary.
He was the original host.
Wow.
He left, though, in 1980 because of a salary dispute with Merv Griffin, who became kind of the king of TV game shows.
Big producer.
Mainly due to this show's popularity. So for a little while, when Woolery left over the salary dispute, believe it or not, Alex Trebek hosted it for like half a year.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting. Wow.
Right? This is not when he and Pat Sajak would flip roles as a lark between the two shows later on. But he was the host for a while. But then December 28th, 1981, Pat Sajak, the guy who's hosted it up until now, who's actually in his last season now. He's about to retire. He's been hosting it ever since. And that's probably the time frame that I remember most, because Wheel of Fortune is one of the game shows that has changed quite significantly while still keeping a lot of elements of its base game intact, right? So if you remember back from the Chuck Woolery and Pat Sajak days when it first started, what was the driving force behind the contestants winning their games, right? They would spin the wheel, they would build up money, they would solve the puzzle. But then what did they have to do with that money? They had to buy prizes.
Yes,
right. They had the camera. The shopping
and
thing. I forgot about
that. And finally at the end, they go, and let's put the rest on a gift certificate.
Exactly. That was the part that got me the most. Like, you've got $45 left. What are you going to do? Well, there was nothing on that set for $45. It was like a lamp for $700, or it was all army prices.
And the prices. Yes, the prices. Yeah. I'll take the ceramic dog for $3,000.
Crazy prices. So the people back then, when Wheel of Fortune, they would win, they would have to go home with all this shit, and they would have to pay the taxes on it. So contestants were continually getting pissed and pissed and pissed until finally they started transitioning to a money only format. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Then they transitioned into the bonus game where you could win. I think it was like a few $1,000s or something like that. Now that bonus game is this crazy thing that has a mini wheel that they spin and they pick up a card, and it can be a Volvo or $50,000 or something like that. They get the five letters, R-S-T-L-N, right? Then they get the vowel E, and those are populated for them. Then they pick three more. All this stuff has evolved over time as things have become cemented or rooted in the game show's legacy. But for me, my favorite part was watching that show with my mother after dinner every evening and watching these idiots have to go and, okay, I solved the puzzle. I'll buy that lamp for $750. And each one of the set, like, they had different rooms of stuff, like, that were themed. Like, there was, let's go to the dining room. Yeah. Let's go to the bedroom. And all the stuff in that little section was themed toward that particular part of the house, or maybe it was a special show where it was like a part of the world or something. I just remember sitting there with my mother trying to solve the puzzles, and what would you buy? What would you, we would write our own score down and everything. It was fun. Just had a blast with it.
The thing I remember most about this is, I mean, you can't talk about him without talking about Vanna White. I mean, she has been a pair.
Letter flipper.
And I remember there was a controversy where they were going to get rid of her because she's
getting
old. The
Playboy controversy.
You know?
Oh, the old controversy.
Because she was getting old. And Pat Sajak says, if she goes, I go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, which I'm like, thank you. You know, I thought that was very, you know, admirable of him. And they've even had times when they, like, when he had, I guess, laryngitis or something, and they switched roles where she hosted and he did the letters and stuff.
Because what she does can be done now. She used to be, she literally was rotating this barrel. There was a letter and a blank. She had to rotate it. So you needed someone to do that. But now they're all digital. You don't, you literally don't need a person to do those things, but it's become part of, it's ingrained into the fabric of that show. Yeah. You need that secondary, the co-host there flipping the letters, you know, kind of a spokesmodel up there. It's become part of it.
It's the same thing with the announcer, Rob Roddy, on Price is Right to Bob Barker, right? Yeah. I mean, come on. You had to have
come
that.
Part of
it. It could have been Bob calling the person down, but they wanted Rod Roddy to do it, or whoever it was. I think with Vanna White, she survived multiple firing attempts in her career. The one you're talking about, Mo, but there was the one from the 80s where some previous photos that she had done when she was younger got released and published in Playboy. Yep. And it was very controversial because that was also around the time when the Miss America contestants were having the same thing done with their photos. And they were wanting to take her off the air because it wasn't considered wholesome content because she had been in Playboy. And I just remember my mother and my father talking about it and saying, like, how, you know, they understood why the why the showrunners would want to take her off, because they were afraid that it would tank the ratings and drive off the advertisers who were on the shows.
Yeah. It's become such an institution now. This is the show. I mean, Pat Sajak and Vanna and the show itself and the wheel and everything about it. You know, I'm going to buy a vowel. Things that have become part of the vernacular of, you want to buy a vowel when you're trying to think of something and you're puzzled. And it's all based on Hangman. Effectively, it's all that is.
Right?
And they've woven a show around guess the words that you can't see, just the blanks.
Yeah. And you know, a show has made like the, what do you call it, the zeitgeist or whatever it is of popular culture when it's on South Park.
Right.
There you go.
These people are really annoying.
Yeah.
That was terrible, but
Stan, Daddy only said that word because he thought he was going to win a lot of money.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at GenXGrownUp.com.
We're with you for the new season of Wheel of Fortune. Join Pat Sajak and Vanna White for the number one game show, number one in glamour and in entertainment, and number one in prizes when contestants combine luck and skill with each spin. Get your family involved and see who can solve the puzzles. It's fun and the chance of a lifetime. All new shows on the new season of Wheel of Fortune, weeknights at 7:30 on Channel 6.
We talked about the well-known game shows, but there were a lot of weird local one-off shows that I remember, but maybe the general, not everybody would remember. So John, why don't you kick us off? What's one of those just strange shows?
and one of my all-time favorites too, so it's called The Liars Club. So let me just start and say, have either of you ever heard of or watched The Liars Club?
Never.
You know what that is?
Nope.
Okay. All right. So first, a little background. It first started in 1969, an amazing year for anything to begin, because that's when I was born. It was hosted by Rod Serling, of all people.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. Rod Serling was the host the first couple of years. Somebody else filled in, and then he came back from 76 to 79. Another guy took over later. It ran, it was like many shows, like I said, it came on and off and on and off. It kept coming back. The concept of the Liars Club is you have, I think it's always two contestants, maybe three. I think it was two contestants and a panel of celebrities. See, these celebrity guests, like Hollywood Squares, had different celebrities. Many of them were regulars, but sometimes people rotated in and out. I remember Soupy Sales, big comedian from the 70s. Wow. He was on there many times. There's a story about him I'll tell you in a second. But the concept was they would bring these obscure objects. They might be like a special tool only known to certain craftsmen, or like a mechanical device that you wouldn't normally use in the home. Like maybe it's a medical device or an industrial tool or something.
Obscure.
Yeah, or like a part of a household object that's usually covered. You don't see the inside of it, right?
Yeah, now I remember this show.
Are you remembering it? Okay.
Yeah.
One of the three celebrities would know the truth. They all knew what it really was, but you couldn't tell by looking at it. And so what happened is each of the three celebrities would say, oh, well, I know what this is. This is a gadget that's used on airplanes to do whatever. And then, okay, well, the next person will go, no, you're totally wrong. This object is actually a medical device used in birthing babies. It's a that's laughable. Babies. This thing is actually a piece from an airplane engine, right? Whatever. One of them was right. And the celebrities would do their normal shtick with each other. So it was really what you were talking about earlier, Mo. It was this entertainmentification of game shows. Let's make them entertaining to watch and fun celebrities, comedians usually. And then what would happen is the contestants, initially they get $100 for guessing right. And then later they made it gambling. Like we talked about earlier, where you could wager a certain amount of your bank. And in subsequent rounds, the odds got better. 1-1, 2-1, 10-1, whatever. Mm. And the guy that had the most points at the end was the one that would win. Now it evolved. evolved in later years. And there was sometimes they would have like a big thing at the end where they had a giant gizmo and they had to wheel something in on a cart because it was too big to hand around to people. Or they would have what I thought was really funny, art corner, where they'd have a piece of art, a painting or something. And the three celebrities would tell you, well, two of them lied, one tell the truth, the name of the painting. Like, oh, well, this is called Two Dogs at Dusk. You know, this one's called whatever. And paintings are often silly names anyway.
Right.
What always got me about this game is that it reminded me later on in life, John, when we started playing the Jackbox game, the format of that game now reminds me of Balderdash, where you have
a word
that you're trying to make up a definition for.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
you're lying for it to try and get votes. It's the same feeling almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll always remember, I mentioned Soupy Sales earlier, and whenever I watch the old episodes from the late 70s on this one set that I remember, there was an episode where they had this thing that looked for all the world like a weirdly shaped chainsaw almost, but it had like a little teeth on the end of it. And when Soupy Sales was describing it, he said, oh, well, this is a saw used specifically for whatever. And he like grinds it on the front of the set and takes a big chunk out of the set.
To show it. So it worked.
Yeah. During the show live, he like, see how well it works. And everybody kind of, you know, was shocked a little bit. But I remember I could always watch and I could look for that hole in the edge of the desk where Soupy Sales sat to see if this was before or after that episode I watched.
Oh,
because he literally damaged the set and they didn't replace it. They just kind of patched it. And there was like this little off color part of the set. So for that and lots of reasons, that's why Liar's Club was my favorite lesser known. Although it was funny how as I started describing it, your eyes kind of lit up and like, oh, yeah, not that lesser known. It's a little bit known. George, how about you? What's your pick for a lesser known game show?
Well, it's probably no surprise that my lesser known game show revolves around poker.
No, of course.
That is the 1978 game show Card Sharks. I really enjoyed this. It's basically it's AC Ducey in a game show format, if you want to think of it. So contestants, they each have their own 52 card deck. They cut their deck off screen and everything. And they're these giant sized cards, of course, so that you can see them well on camera. And they line up like seven or so of them in a row face down so they can't see them. They turn the first card up. And now the contestant has to guess whether it's higher or lower.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the way that the contestants got a chance to decide, you know, first there was a coin toss, but then they had to answer questions and buzz in, and whoever buzzed in faster got to run their cards. And the whole object was to get through all seven of your cards. Now, if you guessed wrong, you went all the way back to the start.
Ugh.
Or if you had moved in a previous round, say like you'd done three cards and then you got kind of a weird card that you weren't sure, like an eight or a nine or something like that, you could freeze. And when you would freeze, they had this little bar that would come across and it would sit right next to that card. And then the next time that you got a chance to go, the host would say, hey, do you want to stay with that card or do you want to change it from another card from your deck, the top card?
Mm.
And so you would, you know, if it was an eight or a nine or something like it, oh, change that card. And they would flip up the new card and you'd be praying for a king or a two or something like that. And higher, lower, and the crowd would be shouting and everything. I just really, really loved that game show. Now, it was originally hosted by Jim Perry, but the host that I remember the most for it was Bob Eubanks.
He was
on it the whole time that I was really watching the show. And my dad would actually watch this show with me because it was a poker show. So, it was right in his wheelhouse of gambling and he would try and come up with ways to like gamble my allowance with me and shit on it.
Did you ever win?
Oh, hell no. He always made sure it was rigged for him to win. But I love that game show. It was just so much fun. But in the modern day landscape of game shows, not a lot of people have heard about it, except for the fact that it's had a revival. And the revival, which went from about 2019 to 2021, was hosted by Joel McHale.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And he did a pretty solid job with it. I watched probably 10 or 20 of those episodes, and he did a solid job. Now, he is definitely no Bob Eubanks. Nobody is Bob Eubanks. when it comes to game show hosting. But it was a solid revival. Other than that, people aren't going to remember this show very much. But of our three lesser knowns, it's probably the most well-known of the three lesser knowns.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I found amusing is, just like with the Liars Club, and you guys, I've never seen this show, don't know it. I don't remember Card Sharks. As you start describing the rules, I'm like, oh, hell. Higher, lower. Like, I remember now. Because even if you didn't, like, tune in to watch it, the way we watched TV back then, it was on before this and after that. So maybe you just stuck around and accidentally saw stuff. I know I watched easily 30 episodes of that passively while I was waiting on the next thing to be on air. So I do know it, as it turns out.
The one that I always... The mechanic that I loved the most was the way that they did the questions to decide who determined control of the next round. Mm-hmm. They would say, how many people out of 100 did blah? Mm. And the first person would say 65. And then the next person, his job was to say higher or lower than that number.
Than the other guy's guess? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so later on, they did a revision where if the person who guessed the number got it exactly right, they got a $500 bonus, which I always thought was cool. It was kind of like the Price is Right thing, where if you got within so much of the final thing, you got both things or whatever. Yeah.
You know what that is? That's Guesspionage, another Jackbox game. Where you pick the percentage, and if you get it right and higher or lower, wow. That is just recycled game shows.
Jackbox is not really doing their own original game shows. They're just stealing shit off of the old TV game shows and making
it extracting little pieces. Like, that was just the Who Gets Control game, and they made a whole game out of it. I'll be damned.
Yep.
I'd forgotten. That was fun. But
it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it a lot. Mo, I remember John's when he just started describing it, but I've got no clue about the one that you've chosen.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because it only ran for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
It didn't make it past, it didn't even make it a full year, but I remember it because of the premise. And the game was called Money Maze, and it came on in the afternoons. So basically, they always had married couples against each other for some reason. Like, so they had two married couples, and they were both had this, like, it's a weird way of, like, determining who got to go into this maze. And it had, like, a huge human size rat maze essentially out there. And what happens is that there'll be a question that they'd have two clues. And so a couple would pick the clue that the other couple saw. And then that couple would have to take a guess based on that clue. If they got it right, they got a point. And if they didn't, then the other couple got a chance to steal. And whoever is out of eight questions, whoever had the most got to go in the maze. I just watched it just for the maze part, because one person would go into the maze, the other one would be above it trying to direct them. And if they could get all the flags that were in the different parts of the maze in a certain amount of time, they won the money. Based on how
it worked. Holy crap. I think I remember this one now too. I must have watched a lot of game shows.
Yeah. It was like one of these ones that came on like 4 o'clock. It was like an after school thing. And really, I only watched it just for the maze, because I kept thinking, how cool would it be to get to play in a huge human-sized rat maze, essentially?
Yeah, like you're just running, gathering cheese.
Just gathering cheese. And they had things like, they had like revolving doors kind of in the middle that the person had to direct them around.
I had not thought of this game until that moment, the revolving doors. Okay. I remember that. Oh, no, that's right.
Yep.
And How did I see this?
And I remember very, very few people getting through the whole thing, because they didn't have a lot of time, and it was hard. You know, it's hard to direct somebody from above.
And it's a maze. It's not easy to get through.
And it was like a simple maze either. It was a damn complicated maze.
Yeah.
The sad thing is, I was trying to look for some videos of this, and there's a couple out there, but it turns out that a lot of the tapings were erased because tapes were so expensive that they would reuse them.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow.
So there was no real archive.
Well, they had to cover all those damn Prices Right and Wheel of Fortune and all those shows. Yeah. Right.
We have thousands of those to get through.
And the host was Nick Clooney. You know the last name.
Nick Clooney.
George Clooney's father?
Father. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. I'll be damned.
His dad. Huh. His dad.
Small world.
Was the host of it. And they said the reason why it got canceled was a lot of it had to do with the cost to run. It was a very expensive show to run for some reason, because the maze was huge, apparently. And they did have a live audience, because they all had to have live audiences back then.
Yeah.
And so it was just for practical reasons. And I guess it just wasn't popular enough to warrant the cost. So, but I just remember, again, just to watch the maze.
Just the maze.
That was the only part that was exciting for it. Mm.
6 months of it, and that was it. And yet somehow we all caught at least one of them, because you sparked memories for both of us.
Oh, it's revolving doors. Oh, my God. I got it.
Oh, man. All right. We get back. One more segment. We're going to talk about some of our favorite memories and some of our favorite games. Stick around.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
Right now, we would like very much for all of you to get a look at the incredible Money Maze.
There are 100 ways to get lost in the Money Maze, but if you find the right path, you win $10,000.
Set the timer at 60 seconds, please, for $10,000.
Your left. Come here. Good. Now, come this way. Come on. Hit the button.
Here on the Maze Racers, every weekday on the Money Maze with your host, Nick Clooney.
We cannot get out of the show without taking a moment to talk about, we talked about some of the better known, some of the lesser known, but we want to take a moment to talk about, highlight our favorites. What are our favorite game shows or game show moments? George, let me start with you. What is your favorite?
Joker, U.S. history.
Joker's wild.
U.S. history. Yeah, I was like, Joker.
It's always that disappointing third one.
Right?
Yeah, Joker, famous Russian authors.
I loved the Joker's wild. It was so fun. I truly loved that show because it was set up, first of all, there was two contestants and it was like a giant slot machine in front of them.
Yeah.
And they would have these handles on their little podiums that they pulled. Yeah. They would have the big one when they played the main thing later on, but it was just these three spinning reels of different trivia categories, and loving trivia the way I do and loving gambling the way that I do. It was like the perfect combining of those two things in a game show. Now, originally this was hosted by its creator, Jack Barry, for several years until he died. The guy I remember hosting it the most was Bill Cullen. And that was the guy who in the 80s was hosting it. He had the glasses, the really thick rimmed glasses. Mm-hmm. And it was so crazy. It was just like, mm-hmm. Oh man, just like every time you were dying for that third Joker,
I know
you were just dying for it. And Joker, U.S. history. God damn it.
And if you got all three, it was like the huge money, but you got to pick your category, like anything you wanted.
You got
right?
to pick your category, which was the big thing. Yeah.
So that's why, and it was always two Jokers and something horribly obscure that you knew you weren't going to get well, but it was big money. That was terrible.
Right. And the Jokers were wild cards, just like right. they are in mm-hmm. poker, yep. which was great. And they could be any category. So you could take two Jokers and pick your own category, but it was less money than if you went with the U.S. history category, which right. now you quote had three of the slots on U.S. history, which mm-hmm. would be more money. And the whole object was to get to a certain value of money to win that round and then go play the big bonus round where you would spend the big one, which was all money cards mm-hmm. and devil cards. Yep. And if you got the devil card, it was like the whammy on Press Your Luck where you would just lose all your money.
Yep.
Oh, I love this one. It was so much fun. All three of us, my mother, my father, and myself, we would all watch this game show. We loved it. To this day, it's one of the few game shows that I don't know. There probably is a home game version, but Jesus Christ, I want an electronic home game version of Joker's Wild. We had a guy who was hosting some game stuff on our Discord server for a while.
And he did a great job.
And he had Joker's Wild as a video game. And I loved it. I would love to see some more of that. It was so much fun. But remember earlier I talked about I had a game show that has probably the most unusual host of any of them, mm-hmm. right?
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that host that is the one host that you would never expect to host a game show was mm-hmm. Calvin Brodus, a.k.a. Nice. Snoop Dogg.
Oh, my God.
Really?
What? I'm not joking. Snoop Dogg hosted a revival of Joker's Wild from about 2017 to 2019 or so.
Really?
When I imagine he was too high to get back to the set or something like that.
Probably. I'm interested. Did you see any of it yet? Yeah. Have you seen it?
I have seen one. I went and looked at it and
I'd have to watch this.
Is it what you'd expect?
I mean, he just D-O-double-G up on the set, man. I mean, he does a professional job in the one episode that I watched. They had a hostess with him as well, Jenny Mai, who was a mildly famous person at that time. She probably is on like some young people's TV show or something. But it was just Joker's wild. The way that the host would call out those jokers. Mm-hmm. That's the part that
dramatic
will stick in my mind forever. Yeah. Joker literature. God damn it.
So I was trying to remember what happens if they get three jokers,
Their own category and it's like a double amount of money of any other thing that they could get.
But did they like automatically win the rounds if they got it right or something crazy? I mean,
it was just that the amount of money often made them win the round because if they had a little bit of money, the amount got them over the line.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. I think, I mean, honestly, I didn't really care. I just wanted them to have all three jokers.
Just to say it, right? And the crowd goes crazy. Oh, my God.
It was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed it. To this day, I wish I could have been on the game show at any point in my life. It's the only game show I would have applied to had I been old enough. But Mo, what about you? What is your favorite game show of all time?
I mean, this is a classic game that everybody knows. I'm never going to explain how the game is played because everyone knows it. It's Jeopardy.
No.
Alex Trebek and all this stuff. And the reason why this is one of my favorites is mostly because it's a game that makes you feel smart and stupid, right? When you get an answer, you feel like you're a genius. And then when you miss it, you feel like you're an idiot. And also, it's a thing with, I say, a story of dads, because me and my dad used to watch it because it came on primetime. It was also one of the few primetime games. Mm-hmm. It came on like right after the news, if I remember correctly, like at night. You know, we like the evening news would come on, then my dad would switch it to Jeopardy.
Right.
So that's back in the 80s. And then a couple of years ago with Amy, my fiance, her dad wasn't doing well, but we would go and watch Jeopardy with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, and it was a game that everybody could participate. It doesn't matter your age. You could feel smart and play. And it was just like, I can't think of growing up and not think about that game. I don't know why. It's just like, it just seemed like it was something that was on every night or often. And he said it was just a classic game that has survived for a really long time.
Well, and it's become a prestige game show. Like, it's not smarmy. It's had almost elevated, not on purpose maybe, but it has become like this, oh, well, there's game shows. Well, then there's Jeopardy. Like, Alex Trebek brought a sense of gravitas to it and decorum and a certain amount of little hoity-toity kind of. Mm-hmm. He was... Something about that show, historically, when I was growing up, I remember it was always Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy back to back.
Yeah.
And it was almost like the cartoon before the movie, right? Like Wheel of Fortune was like, we're playing Hangman at Guess and Letters. And after it is like the cerebral trivia challenge, answer the form of a question, all that stuff, which is an interesting dichotomy, but the two of them played well together. And you said, George, didn't they sometimes they would swap the anchors back and forth?
The hosts.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When they, it was like an April Fool's thing, like Trebek would go back and do Wheel and say Jack would go do Jeopardy, and always felt weird.
Yeah. I remember like when they used to do, like when they started a Celebrity Jeopardy that Saturday Night Live made really good fun of later.
Oh yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
But the original ones, I remember they would get these celebrities on and then you would realize like, holy crap, some of these people are really smart. Like they had Cheech Marin on, Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, right.
He swept it. I mean, I was like, holy crap, this guy is like intelligent. Who knew? You know, after watching all the Cheech and Chong movies, I had no idea. But I liked it because also it made being smart was cool. You know, it wasn't looked down upon there. Like if you were smart, then you won money and that was a good thing.
For you.
So we got Jeopardy, but John, the one you have, I remember this one. So what you can tell everybody about it.
Yeah, so it's my favorite. I would say I'm not a game show fan in general. I don't seek them out. There are some, I have good memories of them. I like watching them, but I don't seek them out. But Press Your Luck has become the game show I'm most fascinated with. And it's all because of the notorious Michael Larson story. I don't know if you remember this. And George, you had just kind of mentioned this with the devil would come up in the bonus round of Joker's Wild. Mm-hmm. And that concept you said was like the whammy on Press Your Luck, which was Press Your Luck had this big board of 18 tiles with a light around them. And the lights would be jumping around on the board and you had to mash the button when you wanted the light to stop. And it might land on a prize or it might land on money or it might land on a free spin or it might land on the whammy, who was this like dancing devil. You lost everything you'd earned so far.
Wow.
So what had happened was this one guy, Michael Larson, he was out of work. He used to be a Mr. Softy ice cream truck driver. Like, he bit all kinds of different careers. He studied videotapes of the game, and he realized this board wasn't random. There was a mechanical cycle in it, and there were only 5 different variations. And he learned that by watching where the light hit, he would know where the next light would hit. And he went on a run this one day. So in the first round, you answer trivia and earn spins. And then you go to the board, and you get to spin, and you can stop whatever you want or until you run out of spins. He earned 7 spins, and then he played this game where people typically won $1,000, $2,000, $3,000. Maybe $10,000. Okay. He ran this thing up to $110,237 because he could figure out when to hit the button to never hit the whammy and always in extra, win extra spins. He never busted. It was after his appearance that the network went, we got to make this truly randomized. They had to move to a computer instead of the mechanical system because it was just like a hardwired Pong machine, right? There weren't computer chips and ROMs. It was just a cycle, electrical cycle. And they're like, we got to change all of this around. There was threats. He's being investigated as a cheater. And of course, everybody was on both sides. Like, did he cheat or did he just study and learn how the game was played?
Yeah, I don't think
he just figured it out. That's not cheating at all.
No.
I agree. Now, he definitely broke the game, but whose fault was it? There was a story of him backstage when they're about to go on with the competitors, and he's talking to a guy in the green room, and he showed up. He had to get a ride to the place. He showed up in a 96-cent suit that he bought at a thrift store. He was a down-on-his-luck guy. He was talking to a guy in the green room who asked him, how many times have you watched the show? And he's like, oh, 4 or 5 times. And he's like, I study videotapes of it. I've watched thousands of hours. So the guy's like, boy, I hope I don't have to go up against you. Well, he did, and he lost furiously.
Wow, that's crazy.
As a game, it's fine. It's cute. The whammy is a big deal. You know, no whammy, no whammy, no whammy. You know, that's another little thing became part of the zeitgeist. But the debacle over Michael Larson and how he was able to game the system and it had changed the system, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, as you said, Mo, when they made you where you couldn't make it rigged. Here was a state where they thought like the player was the one rigging it. But he was just like you said, George, I just figured it out and I deserve to win. Mm-hmm. He took that money. He was, by the way, he was broke within 2 years. He invested in real estate, lost it all.
Oh, jeez.
Because it was like $300,000 adjusted for inflation is how much he got out of that show that day.
In one day.
Bananas. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Infamy. Gone down in infamy as a cheater who didn't cheat. He just did well. Impressed your luck. All right. Hey, we have run through a handful of the hundreds of game shows that are available. I told you we had a huge list that we pared down, decided to just champion some of our favorites. Listener, tell us your memories of the shows we talked about or the ones we didn't talk about. We'd love to hear from you. Hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We'd love to hear your feedback on this, your game show memories. Who knows? Maybe it'll spawn a sequel, a revival of the game show backtrack with another backtrack. How appropriate would that be? That's going to wrap it up, though, for this episode. Guys, I had a hell of a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, I just wish we had more time to go over more of them. Like you said, there's so many I wanted to talk about.
I know, right. It would be a 4-hour show if we did even half of them. It's crazy. That will put a bow on this Backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. Don't worry, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another one, and next week is the regular edition of our show, of course. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here, man.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you we all appreciate most of all. We can't wait to talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.
No more washy shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Wow. Did you plan that, George? That was a great segue.
That was perfect.
That was perfect. Speaking of.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to 2 readers about 1 book, and together we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.